Carl Stewart is an investment advisor representative of Carl Stewart Investment Advisor Incorporated. Call or text Carl now at 512-836-0590. Now, here's Carl.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Money Talk. I'm Carl Stewart, and you're listening to News Radio KLBJ. Thanks for listening. We're here this afternoon, now into our 30th year together. Money Talk is a broadcast about the world of financial and investment planning, where you always drive our agenda by calling or texting 512-836-0590. Also, you may listen online right now at newsradioklbj.com or go there at your convenience and download podcasts of today's and previous broadcasts. You can also go to the free app SoundCloud and download previous shows as well. And this Thursday after the news at 6, we will rebroadcast today's show. It's a great idea to call at the beginning of the hour or text. That will give me my, hopefully, the best opportunity for me to answer thoroughly your question. And if it happens to stump the chump, we have lots of really smart listeners who frequently can help answer your question as well. 512-836-0590. So I decided, since last week we had such, actually we had one call and a few texts, that I came up with a handful of what I would call evergreen questions. And what I would like to do this afternoon is start with those. And absolutely, your call or your text is more important. And should you do that, I will stop my bloviation and do my best to answer your question. So 512-836-0590. Here's a question that I regularly get. And it's, Carl, should I do a Roth conversion? What does that mean? Well, if you have money in an IRA, then you know that when you're a certain age, right now it's 73, you must begin to take the money out. And if your contributions were tax deductible when you put them in, then all of the money that comes out, both your original contributions as well as the after-tax and pre-tax growth, will be subject to taxes. I just see that I think I've got a text. Terrific. 512-836-0590. Here we go. Carl, our house is up around $175,000. The Tacoma TDR Pro I want to buy is up $17,000 from last year's model, and our grocery bill is up $125. A week. Do you see inflation slowing down any point soon? I think the answer right now looks like it's no. The Federal Reserve raised interest rates in an attempt to lower the rate of inflation, and their target's 2%. And depending on which measure you select, it's somewhere between 2.5% to 3.5%. But as you point out, inflation is not something like spreading the peanut butter where it's the same all the way across the bread. It really depends. For example, $100, this was in the Wall Street Journal recently, $100 of groceries in 2019, the same items are priced at $136 today. So what a lot of economists and frankly psychologists say is we think of what we paid before the great pandemic, so 2019, and that's our, we're anchored there is one way it's said. And so when we look at our grocery bills today, yes, we have inflation. And what we're seeing is that some providers of food and services, take McDonald's for example, have been able to raise prices and people still keep going there. On the other hand, I've read that some grocers are noticing people trading down from name brands to store brands, but with inflation above 3% and yet unemployment below 4%, the Federal Reserve is going to have a hard time making an argument that this is the time to lower interest rates. Now, at the beginning of the year, the bet on Wall Street was that the Federal Reserve would lower rates by 6 or 7 times, because last year, I believe in October, Chairman Powell said they were done raising rates. People refer to that as the pivot. The stock market rallied sharply up through the first quarter of this year. But now it looks like these prices are sticky. And as a consequence, the Fed, which will meet and come out soon with their commentary, the bet now is that they won't raise rates now, and they may or may not raise them in September or December. So I think that, frankly, as it comes to things like food and energy, you're likely to see a continued rise in prices. Now, as it regards real estate, that's a very different situation, because what we have now is a shortage of supply. And there are a couple of reasons for that. The primary reason is interest rates. So people who own a home today with a 3% mortgage, are, if they consider moving and buying a house and the mortgage is 7%, even if they could qualify for that, the lifetime payments would just be huge when compared to what they have. So people are reluctant to sell if they're not forced to sell. They have to move for a job or some other personal reason. So in talks in general about the entire economy, it looks like we have a supply shortage of houses, both new houses and older houses coming on the market. And that's unlikely to change until we get a break in interest rates. So it really circles back around to what I was saying before. And it doesn't, increasingly, it looks like we may get a very modest drop in interest rates later this year. But if the numbers come in consistently over the next 2 or 3 or 4 months, it's entirely plausible the Fed will simply hold rates where they are because they haven't lowered inflation and the economy is strong and unemployment is low. So I don't see inflation coming down any point soon unless there's some kind of geopolitical factor that we can't, you know, you can't predict. But just looking at supply and demand in the economy, it looks to me like we're not going to see inflation coming down soon. Thanks for the question. You're listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJs. I'm going to take a break. Call or text 512-836-0590. I'll be back.
You're listening to Money Talk with Carl Stewart on News Radio KLBJ, 590 AM and 99.7 FM. Enjoy the podcast on newsradioklbj.com. Now, here's Carl.
Welcome back to Money Talk. I'm Carl Stewart, and you're listening to News Radio KLBJ. When you have a financial or investment planning question, give me a call or text at 512-836-0590. Back to the Roth conversion. So some people like the idea of taking money that's in their IRA and moving it to a Roth IRA. Why would they do that? Well, there are at least a couple of attractive features. One is money in a Roth IRA, provided it's been in from an initial investment for 5 years or longer, when it's withdrawn and you're over 59 and a half years of age, just like the rules with IRAs, it's not subject to taxation. And that would be all the money you put in, and if it grew, it would not be subject to taxation. The other thing is there's no minimum. I'm just looking at the text here, so I'm going to interrupt myself because I'd rather take a text than do that. So let's just see here. Carl, electric vehicle stock prices, notably Tesla and Rivian, are down because of slow sales. Do you see them as a good long-term play? Well, they're partly down because of slow sales, but the other thing that's happening is they're getting beat up badly, particularly Tesla, based on my reading in China. And so Tesla has promised, Elon Musk has asserted in a recent statement, that they will be coming out with a lower cost Tesla. I would say that the economics 101 would suggest that lower prices should bring in demand. However, it's unclear at this stage whether Americans really have warmed to electric vehicles. You had the first wave, and the wave may have been 10 years. But it's not clear now that people are preferring that. In fact, General Motors recently had an upside earnings surprise and made more money than people anticipated in the recent quarter. And it was attributable to their truck sales, which I got to believe is the opposite of an EV, because it uses a lot of gasoline. And I think it was Kia and Honda, but don't hold me to that, have seen increasing sales of hybrids. I think that people who want to have some exposure, have some kind of electric vehicle, are buying hybrids because of what's known as range anxiety. You want to go to visit your friends in the Panhandle or even further west than that, you may not find a charging station. People tell me a Tesla, and I'm not picking on Tesla, any, say, Rivian or any other EV that's a good around town car, but we're also used to spending no more than 5 minutes filling our gas tank. And if you're taking a trip and you've got to stop and get electricity, it may take 25 or 35 or 40 minutes. So it's a hassle. That hassle hasn't been fixed in terms of range anxiety. And then prices need to come down. And then also the companies have to become profitable. Tesla, my recollection is the only profitable domestic EV producer. So do I think it's a good long-term play? Frankly, I would be hesitant today because of that, what I've just said. The other thing is, I don't think most electric vehicle owners understand how much depreciation there can be in an EV. I've learned this. It's more priced as a computer than an automobile. You may have a few miles on your EV, but let's say you bought it if you bought it in 2014, I'm going to use the Tesla because I know this information. Tesla had already been given the award of Car of the Year 2 years consecutive by Car and Driver magazine. That never happened before. And everyone said, this is a terrific automobile. Well, the fact is that in my personal experience, the value dropped substantially, regardless of the amount of miles. You might have 30,000 miles or 60,000 miles, and in a gasoline-powered automobile, the mileage would be a key factor in its sales price if you wanted to sell it. So I think there's some hurdles for EVs. From what I've read, kind of the early adopters are done buying theirs. If they're happy, they may trade in and buy another one. But across the United States, people are not buying EVs. They're buying hybrids and they're buying traditional combustion engines. So I think it could be a long-term play, but I think it's way too early to know. Thanks for the question. You're listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJ. Call or text 512-836-0590. So the two major benefits of a Roth IRA are, number one, if you make withdrawals under the rules, you don't pay any income tax on it. And secondly, you're not subject to a required minimum distribution. So this may sound kind of unrealistic, but I encounter this on a regular basis. Let's suppose that you worked at a place where you had a defined benefit plan and had a 401k or a 403b. That could have been, for example, in Central Texas. You could have been a state employee or perhaps a county or city employee or a teacher in the teacher's retirement system where you were part of a defined benefit plan and you could make voluntary contributions pre-tax to the 401 or 403b. So now you're ready to retire, and let's say that you were at the state, so you're going to have two guaranteed streams of income because a lot of school districts don't participate in Social Security, but you're going to get Social Security and lifetime income, and you've accumulated a significant multi-hundred-thousand-dollar 401k. And you're thinking, you know, I think I'm going to have enough money to live on, what I'd like to do is start to move some of that money over into a Roth. Can I do that? And the answer is yes. And the way you do that is if, let's say, you've retired, so you're no longer a plan participant, you decide who you want as your custodian for your IRA, you open an IRA and a 401, I beg your pardon, and a Roth IRA, the money comes over, it's called an IRA rollover from your employer, and then you can decide how much of that you want to, and the term now is convert to a Roth IRA. This is a taxable event because you paid pre-tax dollars into the 401k. Now, there's been an increase in Roth 401ks, and so a portion of that 401k is going to come over as a Roth, but perhaps not all of it if there's an employer contribution. So when you think about a Roth conversion, part of it is just, do I want to have the flexibility when I'm older to not take the required minimum distribution, and I like the idea of being tax-free on the other end. Another possibility is that your beneficiaries, let's say you and your spouse pass away and your beneficiaries are in high income tax brackets. Mm-hmm. If you have a Roth IRA, they will inherit that. That's called a Roth beneficiary IRA. Under the current rules, they'll have 10 years to take that money out. as they please, but they will not be subject to income tax. If they receive your IRA as a beneficiary IRA, they'll still have the 10 years to take the money out, but they'll have to take it out and pay income taxes. So it really comes down to your long-term financial plan, because you're going to pay taxes on anything on which taxes have not been paid. You can pay now and then let the money grow on a tax-free basis, or you can take it, if you're perfectly reasonable, to say, look, this is my savings. I'm not interested in paying more taxes. In that case, just leave the 401k at your employer if they'll allow that, or do an IRA rollover. You're listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJ. Call or text 512-836-0590. It's been a while since I've got this question, but I know from just listening to people that it's an important question. So listeners to this broadcast, when it comes to their investments, whether that's their retirement plan, the investments in their own names, they have a decision to make. And if you're a regular listener, you've heard me articulate this in this fashion. Some people are do-it-yourself people. They may be do-it-yourself by fixing things up around the house. They may be do-it-yourself by doing their own lawn work. Or they may be do their own taxes on TurboTax or some other way of doing it. And if they do that, in my experience, that is first and foremost a personality issue. They enjoy the sense of control, and they're prepared to put in the effort to get it done, and they feel a sense of accomplishment when they do that. Well, 45 years ago when I got into this world, they didn't really have much opportunity to be their own financial advisor, but certainly over my career that's completely changed. So the first thing you do when you think about whether or not you're going to have another person as your investment or financial advisor is to look at yourself in the mirror and say, if I were to engage someone's services, would it drive me crazy because now I've lost control? The stock market's going to go down because it always goes down. Frankly, it comes back as well. But when the stock market goes down, am I going to be really upset and really anxious and really unhappy with my advisor? Or do I have the ability to hold on to myself in my own emotions because I know that it's going to come back? So that's the fundamental. And if you're going to be your own investment advisor, that's fine. I think that's great. And you have lots of information. And some of you are regular listeners to this broadcast who call me from time to time, and I salute you for doing that. Because it can be an avocation. If you have the time and the interest, then you can do a lot of studying and a lot of reading, and it's free. I mean, you can go to websites and read all kinds of things. Just avoid those websites that have the you can't lose money. This is, you're going to make 20% a year or whatever. You want to run away from those as fast as you can and look at it as education. Then you can select a custodian. And we all know the big names, Fidelity and Vanguard and Schwab and E-Trade. There are many others as well. And that's where you do your investing, because you have the ability to make your own investment strategy, your own asset allocation, and your own security selection, and you know what you want to accomplish, and you can match up what you want to accomplish with what your investment choices are. It's the bottom of the hour. I'm going to take a break. We have all of our lines available. Bloviation Station, 512-836-0590. I'll be back.
You're listening to Money Talk with Carl Stewart on News Radio KLBJ, 590 AM and 99.7 FM. Enjoy the podcast on newsradioklbj.com. Now, here's Carl.
Welcome back to Money Talk. I'm Carl Stewart, and you're listening to News Radio KLBJ. Thanks for listening. We're here this afternoon for another 26 minutes. When you have a question, call or text 512-836-0590. You may listen online at newsradioklbj.com or go there and download previous broadcasts. You can also go to the free app SoundCloud and download those broadcasts. And this Thursday after the news at 6, we will rebroadcast today's show. I have all our lines available, no incoming texts, 512-836-0590. So I was talking about the decision to be a do-it-yourself investor or to hire an advisor. And I think I was pretty articulate about the type of person who wants to do it himself or herself. And I think when people become unhappy frequently, it's that they haven't taken the time to think about themselves and analyze their own behavior. And as a consequence, they do it themselves and it creates great anxiety. The stock market drops 20%, which happens on, or seems like, a regular basis, and they lose sleep. On the other hand, they engage an advisor and then they're constantly looking over her shoulder and saying, why'd you do this? Or I read about this in the Wall Street Journal, or what about that? So you really have to decide, frankly, on this area who you are. It's a bit like, at least in my personal experience, doing your own taxes or hiring a CPA. Because if you have a simple, straightforward situation, maybe all W-2 income, take the standard deduction. You can do it electronically with the IRS these days, or do a TurboTax, fine, be my guest. But some people don't know how to do that, or they have more complexities. They have other investments in K-1s and partnership papers, 1099s, and they make a mistake, and then they get an unpleasant letter from the IRS. So you got to decide who you are. So let's decide. We've already decided that some of us are do-it-yourself investors. Now let's talk about the other people. So what is it that you want in a financial advisor? First, let me just describe, if I may, the kind of the ways in which you can connect with people. And oh, by the way, call or text 512-836-0590. So back in the day, people who could buy stocks and bonds and mutual funds on your behalf were called stockbrokers, and they were transaction-based. That's still a huge part of the what we call retail financial services, financial people doing business directly with humans, not with, say, pensions and endowments and things like that. But the name stockbroker has gone out of use, and now the name is financial advisor. That's, my understanding, is not a legal title, where investment advisor is, and I'll come back around to that. So these people can either be transaction-based or they can be advisory fee-based. One is not wrong and one is not right. I think one, frankly, having been around this for over 45 years, gives the advisor more flexibility than the other. But there are plenty of good, honest, high-integrity people who are transaction-based people. And as long as they are completely transparent with you in terms of how they're compensated, then I'm okay with that, absolutely. However, the other model is, I think, has some attraction to it as well. It looks to me like, let me see, I've got a text here. Let's see what it says. Listen to Carl Stewart or go to Eeyore's birthday party. What would any weird Austin do? Well, you go to Eeyore's because there's not going to be a rebroadcast. I was down at about 12th and Lamar, and I thought, where are all these people walking? And then the police were there. Then I realized that they were parking and walking to Eeyore's. I love that. What a great Austin tradition. Can you discuss the best U.S.-based investment options presently? For example, mid or small value or large cap growth? That's a terrific question. So we've had a sustained leadership in growth over value and large cap growth especially. I mean, the whole concept behind two people who got the Nobel Prize, Eugene Fama and Kenneth French, was that over long periods of time, smaller stocks outperform larger cap stocks and value stocks outperform growth stocks. But boy, I tell you, it's been a long time since that happened. So I think what you have to do is you have to decide, am I more of a momentum investor? Because clearly, momentum is on the side of growth investors. And if that's the case, then buying, say, I don't make recommendations here because my lawyers will shoot me, but buying something like the Russell 1000 Growth would be one way to do that. It would be cheap and tax efficient in an exchange-traded fund. Frankly, my experience over 45 years is that these things last a long time and then they change and you don't see it coming. In 95 through 99, you had to be in growth stocks and specifically in tech stocks. The NASDAQ peaked in March of 2000 and it took 15 years for it to come back to that level. And from the March of 2000 until the global financial crisis in 2008, value outperformed growth. So frankly, I like buying the whole market and then adding around the edges some actively managed stock funds. So if I were you, I'd have a picture kind of like, say, the circle is the Earth, and then there are little satellites or moons around it. So you put the bulk of your stock allocation in an index that covers the bulk of the stock market. Like the Fidelity has a total stock market, Vanguard has a total stock market. I'm sure a lot of other firms do as well. And then if you choose, you can put in some things to give you some additional participation. So for example, if you're a contrarian investor, you could buy a quality small cap value fund, because there you're buying at a much more attractive valuation because it's underperformed versus its growth investors for a long time. I happen to have done that because I'm patient, and I think that an actively managed concentrated portfolio in small cap value where there are real bargains is worthwhile. And the other side, you could buy just a value index. I mentioned if you buy the Russell 1000 growth, you could buy the Russell 1000 value, or you could buy the 3000 growth or the 3000 value and be done with it. I like to buy the total stock market and then pick and choose what I would do around that, as opposed to focusing on just mid or small cap. Thanks for the question. You're listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJ. Call or text 512-836-0590. Here is a text. Carl, I'm a CPA with a widow client who needs a book to help her learn more about personal finances to help her understand investing and not be so intimidated. Her husband handled all of this. Do you have a book you would recommend? I hate this question. Because I get it regularly. And the answer is I don't have one. I apologize. If she would do this, and the way you describe her, she probably wouldn't. If she would just take a subscription to the Wall Street Journal and just every day spend 30 minutes and just thumb through it and read the headlines of every article and maybe the first paragraph, 6 months, 9 months from now, she's going to be really knowledgeable. I mean, really knowledgeable about the global economy. It's going to give her a sense of confidence as she moves forward with her investments. But I don't have what I would call a primer or a real basic that describes what stocks are and bonds are, and then has what I think of as common sense investment strategy. As I've alluded to from time to time, generally books that sell are ones that promise certain kinds of returns. If I wrote a book and said the things I said here on Money Talk the last 29 years, nobody'd buy it because it sounds boring as heck. And so I'm afraid I don't. It's a great question. If somebody else listening thinks they have a book that is not trying to sell something but really is educational, please send me a text or give me a call. Thanks for your question. Getting down to our last quarter hour, if you've been thinking of calling or texting, 512-836-0590. Do it right away, and I'll be back.
You're listening to Money Talk with Carl Stewart on News Radio KLBJ, 590 AM and 99.7 FM. Enjoy the podcast on newsradioklbj.com. Now, here's Carl.
Welcome back to Money Talk. I'm Carl Stewart, and you're listening to News Radio KLBJ. Thanks for listening. When you have a question, call or text 512-836-0590. I hope the person who was the CPA is still listening. I just got this text. Carl, any of the books by the late John Bogle are excellent. No sales pitch in any of his books. Good reading and excellent education. So Jack Bogle, B-O-G-L-E, it's a great story. He worked for Wellington Asset Management, a highly regarded, very old asset management firm in Boston. I've actually been there years and years ago to visit with some of the people. And the story, and I didn't hear it from him, but it's my understanding that he came up with the idea of having an index fund. And of course, they were active managers. They were stock and bond managers. And he came up with the idea of an index fund. And he pitched it to the people who were in charge. And they said, no way, Jack. And he started Vanguard. And the rest, as they say, is history. So Jack Bogle, B-O-G-L-E, would be a place to look. Okay, now, let's just go back here to an earlier text that I got. And it said, hi, Carl. Thinking about it just from a taxation view, Why would anyone invest in equity mutual funds over exchange-traded funds? Okay, well, first let's make sure that we know what we're talking about, because the vast bulk of money is in passive indexes and passively managed exchange-traded funds. But more and more, traditional asset managers, active managers like Capital Group, Massachusetts Financial Services, and no doubt many others, have actively managed equity funds in an ETF wrapper. And I suspect they're also tax efficient, okay? But I don't know that. I've just begun to understand those. I would say to you that there are traditional active managers who have very highly tax-efficient ways in which they trade, and that's something you can look into. If you find an active manager that does something that an ETF will not, I'll give you an, there's two ways that could happen. One is it's a strategy you can't find in an ETF or it's satisfactory. Or the other is it's a performance characteristic that you're looking for. So what I'm talking about is, let's suppose you want an event-driven fund that does merger arbitrage, or you want a trend-following fund that uses managed futures. You may or may not be able to find an exchange-traded fund that does that, but your question is about equity funds. And I would say that in my experience, I would recommend the bulk of the money in your equity allocation to be in index passive ETFs. But I think that there are some other funds that may either do better than the ETF in down markets to help protect your principal, or may do better in up markets to help grow your principal, and they can be tax efficient. So it's the thrust of your question, I think, is logical, but I think there are exceptions to it based on the strategies you want in your portfolio and based on the managers you look at. You're listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJ. Call or text 512-836-0590. Carl, great show. Love what you do. Thank you. I had a target of $3 million in my 401k and IRA as my retirement number. It just hit before the last election. I guess maybe in 2020. In Joe Biden's first year, I lost a third of my retirement account. 3 years later, I'm almost back to $3 million. I no longer think $3 million is my number. Let's just see. It's hard to read the text. Now I think I need at least a third more, just in case there is another downside of a third. Am I thinking correctly or worried about nothing? I think we could work two or three more years to get to 64 or 65. Any thoughts on needing more to ensure a 30% drop over $3 million? So the stock market is going to drop, and it's going to drop sharply. Could happen Monday, could happen a year from Tuesday. I don't know. So the big question is, what's the proper asset allocation? Because let's just suppose you take your $3 million and you put it 60% in stocks, and you put the other, but you put the other 40% in a money market fund. So the stock market drops 30%. 60% of your portfolio drops 30%. You have an 18% loss because the other side laid flat. So that's a way to think about asset allocation. It's a lot more sophisticated than that. But if you have a target of a significantly higher number, you're going to have to lean into stocks and accept the risk. If you want to reduce the volatility and the risk because you have two or three years and you're worried about that, then you need to have non-correlating assets. The easy one is investment-grade bonds, although they, in 2022, went down 13 or 14% when the S&P went down 26 and the NASDAQ down went over 40. But you could put together a bond portfolio, which I like, of a short-term bond fund, an intermediate-term bond fund, and something called a multi-sector bond fund. So this year, year to date, the Bloomberg Ag, which is like the S&P 500 of bonds, through yesterday is down about 3%. The largest bond fund, which is a passive index fund from Vanguard, symbol BND, is down 3%. I have an actively core bond fund that I use personally is down 2.5. And then there's a short-term bond fund I use, which is up 2.3, and a multi-sector bond fund, which is down 0.17. So when I put those three together in equal parts, I'm down less than the bond market is, using the ag as the proxy for that. You can add investment-grade bonds. Do not add high-yield bonds. because they're positively correlated to stocks. You could look at other strategies depending on the time and interest. If you're a regular listener, I'd mention some of these arcane strategies under the rubric of event-driven and trend-following. I use those, and they've been very helpful in bad times. So that's what you could do with that. But we could have another drop. There's no question about that. I think most people after 2022 were shocked at what a great year 2023 was in the first quarter of this year, hitting all-time highs in a number of indexes. You're listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJ, 512-836-0590. Let's see. I've got somebody on the phone. Okay. James, you're on the air. How may I help? Kyle, do I have James on the air? Okay. James, I'm going to give you one more chance. I'm going to go on about everything else. Are you there? Okay. 512-836-0590. Let's just go to a text here. Okay. Carl, I just got in the car. I'm not sure how much bloviation your listeners have been subjected to. Which we all actually love. But could you speak on whether leaving money in an employer 401k after you switch companies has any benefit? And if not, what should I do with the money? Love your show. Thanks. Okay, so you're switching employers. Your new employer has a 401k. They have a provision where you can move your old 401k into this employer. I like the idea of doing that, all things being equal, because it simplifies your life. However, all things may not be equal. You may find that the new employer's plan is not up to your standards, and if the former employer will let you leave it there and you like the plan, then leave it there. A lot of employers don't want the liability of managing, being responsible for your 401k because they'd like you to leave. You can always take that money from your previous employer and put it in your own IRA rollover and invest the money yourself. Or you can go through an advisor. 401k plans for larger plans should be cheaper because you can spread the expenses out among a bunch of participants. So it may be more expensive to do an IRA rollover, but you may gain control, and you may find that attractive. So if you had two good plans, the one that you no longer participate in, which you do not participate, and the new one that you're going to participate, if they were equally attractive in terms of their investment options and their expenses to you, the plan participant, going from the old plan to the new plan is exactly what I would do. And what you would do is you go to your former employer, ask for a document, then they would ask you to fill it out and to where to send the money, and they might wire it or send you a check to give to your employer if you know your employer will do it. If they let you stay there and you don't want an IRA, that's okay too. Great question. You're listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJ. 512-836-0590. Here's a text. See if we can get to this. Carl, I haven't pulled the trigger on medium-term 4 to 7 year duration bonds. Can you provide the pros and cons of owning a bond fund as opposed to owning an actual bond? And how will both react when the Fed stays lowering the Fed funds rate? Starts lowering the Fed funds rate. Thank you. Assuming I buy in now when 10 years at 4.8 yield, your live broadcast is during the UT game, so I will listen to the podcast response. I've only got a couple of minutes, so I'm going to make a copy of this and answer it more next week. I think the pros and cons of a bond fund. I like active management. As listeners know, I'm a fan of passive management in equities with some small satellites around them. I'm a fan of active management because I think passive management following indexes, the indexes can be heavily weighted. For example, the Bloomberg Ag has got a big exposure to treasuries. I like the fact that you can have an active manager who can go between treasuries and agencies, other mortgage-backed securities, etc. So I like actively managed bond funds in the space, the intermediate term investment grade space that you articulate. Actual bonds are great. It's the only one investment you have where you know what you're going to get in terms of income and you know what the par value is. But unless you have a lot of money, it's hard to get diversification, and you're doing it yourself or you have your advisor buy individual bonds. And there may be dislocations within the bond market that an active manager can take advantage of. Back when the Silicon Valley Bank collapsed and the government came in. There were some great bonds in the to buy in the bond market. An active manager had the opportunity to take advantage of that, and you wouldn't have because you were in individual bonds. If you decide to sell the individual bonds, you have to recognize you have to pay somebody to do that. If you buy the bond fund and you buy it without a sales charge and you sell it without a sales charge, then it becomes cheaper for you. You lose the future value guarantee. There's no way around it. But the bottom line is, I much prefer the active bond if I were in your shoes. I've got another text, but I'm out of time. I want to thank Kyle for doing his usual terrific job and invite you to next Saturday. Tune in to Money Talk after 4. I'll see you then.
Carl Stewart is an investment advisor representative of Carl Stewart Investment Advisor Incorporated.